Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is New Elections Office Opens by Benjamin Fisher. The Dubuque County Elections Office joined partners in the business community and other local government officials to officially open its new digs in a historic building on Central Avenue. Throughout the grand opening and ribbon cutting on Wednesday, past and present elections officials and supporters spoke of the occasion as an historic one. The new space is the most accessible location in the department has ever had and the first without the need for law enforcement security. It is the first space the department has ever had where all full-time elections officials are together in one place and the first space designed with elections in mind. It looks like it's been here for 100 years, but we've only been working on it for a few months, Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Drugato, official commissioner of the elections, said at the opening event. It was 1836 when Dubuque County first administered elections, and really, ever since, we've always been piecemealed. For the first time, we have all the election staff and process together in one place. Both Drugato and his predecessor, longtime county auditor Denise Dolan, had struggled for years to consolidate the county's elections department to make the service more convenient and efficient for staff and voters alike. For years, the county's central election staff had to operate in offices adjacent to the county auditor's office on the fourth floor of the Dubuque County Courthouse. But those offices had far too little room for either the significant set of legal required equipment needed to run countywide elections or for even modest crowds of voters to do their business. Most recently, Deputy Commissioner of Elections Jenny Hillary had to manage some staff from the courthouse and others in an elections annex, which moved from rental building to rental building around Dubuque in recent years. "I won't have to plan staff enough to handle the phones, then run back and forth and have to track where the different equipment is," Hillary said on Wednesday. "When we used to move ballots or voting machines, we would have to have sheriff's deputies with us all the time. Now they will be here in our own locked vault until Election Day. I'm so excited. The lettering just went on the front window today. Every day, something new falls into place." The new office is at 880 Central Avenue, the home of Hendricks Feed and Seed, from 1942 to 2022. The building and a neighboring property had been purchased by the City of Dubuque in 2021 for $1.7 million as part of the city's plan to build a new parking ramp. In 2023, the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors approved what amounted to a property swap with the city for the adjacent parking lot the county owned, each party paying the other $1 for the other's property, as was legally required. County Supervisors Ann McDonough and Harley Potta voted for the purchase, sharing Drugato's vision of the building being elections home for the long term. During Wednesday's event, elections officials and members of the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce guided visitors around the space where six voting booths were set up on tables. That was only a preview, however, to what Hillary said would be a massive expansion of in-person voting capacity. Previously, for in-person absentee voting before Election Day, the elections office in the courthouse could fit four people voting and another three being processed at the same time. Frequently, ahead of general elections, long lines would form outside the elections office. The new space will allow up to 12 people voting at a given time and from 6 to 8 being processed. The new space also features automatic ADA-accessible sliding doors at an entrance at grade with the sidewalk outside. Drugato said that would continue his goal of increasing accessibility across elections, having worked closely with the Dubuque County Disabilities Council in 2022 to troubleshoot the process, for which the county has received state and national recognition. The new space also comes with an adjacent public parking lot with three rows of stalls. No more having to feed a meter, go through courthouse security, ride four floors up in the elevator to change your voter registration, Dragato said. Tina Smith worked for county elections for years when the department's overflow was in a rental building at 75 Locust Street before taking a job at the Dubuque Community School District and attended the grand opening. She said, the old location was also just really not handicapped accessible, especially if there was snow. It was hard for people. This feels very welcoming, looks very professional. I kind of wish I could come back and work here if elections were in the summer. The auditor also celebrated the fact that work on the minimal renovations needed for the building cost just $8,000 of $25,000, which had already been included in the elections department budget for the space. Savings came partly from utilizing the county's already qualified maintenance staff from the courthouse during winter months when outside projects were on hold, and also through donations of secondhand office furniture and supplies by community businesses. In-person absentee voting before the June primary begins May 15th. The next story is titled, East Dubuque Balances Budget and Works to Mitigate $1 Million Deficit, by Elizabeth Kelsey. Dateline, East Dubuque, Illinois. East Dubuque officials are continuing to work to reduce the city's budget deficit, including recent moves to replenish a city fund that was used outside of its intended purpose to support general operational costs. The City Council recently approved the sale of two Cincinnawa Avenue lots, which were intended to house new fire and police stations before those projects were nixed due to financial difficulties. Council members then approved the designation of funds from both property sales to the city's tax increment financing account. In recent months, East Dubuque officials revealed that money from the TIF account, along with other city accounts, had been used to cover general operational costs when they should not have been. This left the city's general fund at a negative balance of $885,006 at the end of fiscal year 2022, a deficit that increased to $1,010,328 by the end of fiscal year 2023. The city's financial books were unbalanced for nearly a year, beginning in August 2022, delaying the completion of the fiscal year 2023 audit, which was approved by the council earlier this month. That audit shows that while the TIF account appears to be funded, we're in deficit, so we don't actually have the money to spend on the TIF, said City Manager Bob Seitz. TIF is a commonly used development incentive. Under a TIF agreement, local taxing bodies for a period of time do not collect property taxes on the increased value of a property that is being developed or redeveloped. In many development agreements utilizing TIF, the money that would have been collected as taxes instead is put in a fund for the city to make additional investments in a designated TIF district and promote future economic development there. The two properties were purchased and developers have plans for their use. $125,000 and plans to construct an event center there. John Onescorj of Johnny O. Properties, LLC, purchased the parcel at 166 Cincinnawa for $63,000 and intends to create a live music venue on the site. Seitz said the $188,000 from the sale of the two properties was designated for the city's downtown TIF district fund as a down payment toward restoration of the fund. He added that it represents about 20% reduction of the city's $1 million deficit recorded at the end of last fiscal year. The only way that we could do that is because we are going to finish this current fiscal year in the black, he said. All of the work we've been doing in these recent months has saved us enough money that, without any increase in revenue, we're able to balance the budget for the remainder of this fiscal year. One shift that officials say has saved the city money was a change in the operations of the administrative court system East Dubuque officials launched in early 2022 to handle misdemeanors and ordinance violations. The city opened the court hearing system to other neighboring Illinois municipalities, and Stockton, Warren, Hanover, Scales Mound, and Elizabeth all joined. However, up until the fall of 2023, East Dubuque had been paying all costs for every municipality's participation in the system, including processing citations and software and licensing costs. In September, East Dubuque officials announced they would ask participating cities to pay an equal share of the cost for the system. Sites said beginning in February, the court system's administration responsibilities transferred to Warren, and each of the six communities has been paying its share of administrative costs since November. We had a constructive process we went through to make sure it was fair to everybody, and we all still got the benefits of the program, he said. In the past, the city of East Dubuque was paying between $50,000 and $60,000 a year running that program. Now we pay our share, which is $543 per month. Mayor John Digman said getting the city's books up to date and carefully tracking departmental expenditures, which Sites is personally approving, allowed the city to balance its budget for the remainder of the fiscal year, which ends April 30th. By that time, the city will need to propose a budget for the coming fiscal year, which Digman said will be both balanced and realistic when it comes to spending and revenue. Looking at last year's budget, they had extra revenues figured in there for things like dispensaries that are still not open, he said. You can't spend money you don't have. We have to have that mentality. It seems like before they were spending money before they had it. Former city manager Loris Herrig, whose contract with the city was terminated by the council in July, said he could not comment on the situation due to possible litigation when contacted by the Telegraph Herald for this article. The 2023 audit, in addition to highlighting the city's budget deficit, reported fund transfers and disbursements that were not approved by city council members, unauthorized pay raises for Herrig, and an improper severance agreement with a former city employee, all of which were approved by Herrig, Sites said. As the city continues to mitigate its deficit, Sites said officials intend to propose a facade improvement project in the city's downtown district, which will allow businesses to improve and restore the outsides of their buildings. That's what TIF is meant for, to improve the economic outlook of a city, he said. That will make a big impact on the look of the downtown, which will make a big impact on people's businesses and intentions to invest in East Dubuque and people's willingness to come here and bring their business. The last story from the front page is titled, Defendant's Father Testifies in Jackson County Murder Trial, by Grace Neeland, Dateline Maquoketa, Iowa. The father of a man accused of second-degree murder testified Wednesday that he feared for his life in the moments leading up to his son fatally shooting his alleged attacker. Brian A. Manning, 37, of rural Maquoketa, is charged in Iowa District Court of Jackson County with second-degree murder in the fatal 2022 shooting of 60-year-old Michael Berg. Prosecutors argue Manning willfully and deliberately shot and killed Berg the evening of November 2, 2022, while the defense contends Manning only did so after failed attempts to stop an intoxicated Berg from attacking Manning's father, Bruce Manning. The trial began Monday and continued Wednesday with testimony from witnesses for the defense, including Bruce Manning, who spoke about the events leading up to the shooting. The incident took place at a rental home on the Manning family property in the early evening of November 2, 2022. Bruce Manning said Brian Manning had brought Berg to see the house as a longtime friend and potential tenant. Bruce Manning testified that when he saw the pair at the house later that evening, however, it was clear something was wrong. I heard Brian screaming, "Mike's gone effing nuts, he's trying to kill me," Manning said. At that point, I could see both of them, and Mike was running at Brian and swinging his fists around, and I realized something was really wrong. Bruce Manning said he approached the pair and reached his arms out in an attempt to calm Berg. He testified that Berg then rushed him, wrapped his arms around his neck and began to squeeze. Bruce Manning has titanium rods and screws in his neck that were surgically placed after a 2020 farming accident that broke his neck and several ribs. He testified Wednesday that Berg was aware of the injury. "Mike never let go of my neck until the very end," Bruce Manning said. "He had a lock on my neck and he just kept squeezing. At one point, he squeezed so hard that my neck popped and I screamed in pain. I thought that was it, that I was dead." Bruce Manning testified that his son, Brian Manning, tried to remove Berg's hands from Bruce Manning's neck without success. Throughout the encounter, Bruce Manning said Berg did not respond to verbal commands or pleas to release him. Defense attorneys on Wednesday entered several photos into evidence that were taken at the scene that showed redness and swelling around Bruce Manning's neck, chest, and throat. Bruce Manning said he heard a warning shot of Brian Manning fired in a failed attempt to deter Berg and later heard a second shot that struck Berg in the torso. Bruce Manning testified that he immediately applied pressure upon seeing the wound and reported the incident to 911. "All I could think was, this isn't Mike," Bruce Manning said. "I know Mike, and that wasn't anything like him." Emergency personnel eventually arrived and loaded Berg into an ambulance for transport. He later was pronounced dead. According to his autopsy, Berg's blood alcohol content at the time of his death was 0.19%, more than two times the legal limit to drive in Iowa. Upon cross-examination, prosecutor Andrew Prosser prodded Bruce Manning for additional details and a more concrete timeline, pointing out that Bruce Manning was the only witness to the incident and that Berg was unarmed. Bruce Manning reiterated what he said upon direct examination, adding that he did not actually see Brian Manning shoot the gun. When asked, Bruce Manning also admitted to certain levels of frustration with how the case has been handled since the incident. Jurors on Wednesday also heard testimony from law enforcement officers and other witnesses. Fairway store manager Trevor DeForest testified to the validity of store security footage played for the jury that showed Berg purchasing alcohol hours before his death. Two law enforcement officers, Jackson County Sheriff's Department Deputy Russ Long and Maquoketa Police Department Officer Jason Heyer, testified to previous encounters with Berg where he had been arrested for combative or assaultive behavior while intoxicated. "We did have an incident where he physically resisted officers," Long recalled. "It took maybe three of us to subdue him." Long clarified under cross-examination, however, that that incident occurred over 30 years ago and that Berg was cordial in subsequent interactions where he was not under the influence. Heyer testified to an incident that took place in February 2020. Per his testimony, Berg assaulted both Heyer and a nurse at a local emergency room, though no injuries were reported. Court will reconvene at 9 a.m. today for testimony from additional witnesses and closing arguments. Now we turn to page 2, the Dubuque and Tri-State page, and we have an article from the Throwback Thursday column titled, "Dry Cleaner Becomes Belly Dancer to Entertain Residents at Dubuque Nursing Home 45 Years Ago," by Eric Hogstrom. A Dubuque dry cleaner taught belly dancing on the side and performed at local nursing homes 45 years ago. Jan Ford taught at the Academy of Middle Eastern Dance in 1979. She and her proteges, Shirley Bond and Nancy Thompson, adopted exotic-sounding names for their performances, which included veils to area nursing homes. Here's how the Telegraph Herald reported on one such a performance in its March 26, 1979 edition, "Dancing to a Different Drummer." It was a cold, dark night inside the old manor on the hill. It sounded like someone was being tortured. A piercing wail echoed through the dark corridors. While in the dining room, a small woman gripping a cane withered on the tiled floor and writhed there, while her shadow convulsed beneath her. Suddenly, the wailing stopped, and lights clicked on, and the woman jumped up. People applauded. The woman bowed, waved her cane, and scampered off like a cheerleader at the end of a timeout. A bizarre cult ritual? No, just another performance by a moonlighting dry cleaner, this time for a family night at Sunnycrest Manor Nursing Home. The dancing dry cleaner is Jan Ford, also known as Jana Middle Eastern Dancer, or, to the less inspired, Jana the Belly Dancer. Ford is the number one wriggler in the Jacine Dance Caravan and Queen Sheba of the Academy of Middle Eastern Dance, which shares quarters at 2197 University Avenue with the Dubuque Karate Club. Also performing for the nursing home residents were Ford's protégés, Shirley, Sina Bond, and Nancy, Sheila, Thompson. They teach dance classes at the academy and perform with the caravan for nursing homes, businesses, and local social clubs and other groups. When the three women aren't moving around like overdressed paint shakers, they follow a pretty normal routine. Ford works at her husband's dry cleaning shop, Bond raises four children, and Thompson teaches at Irving School. Ford first swapped the steam press for harem pants 5 years ago when she enrolled in a YWCA belly dancing class. "I'd always enjoyed the music," she said, "and when I heard the class was being offered, I decided it would be better than sitting home knitting." To learn a few new twists, she took more classes in Madison, Wisconsin. After attending workshops, Ford became Jana and opened her studio 3 years ago. Jana, Sina, and Sheila don't like to be called belly dancers. "We dance wearing more clothes than most women wear on the street in summertime," Ford said. "Believe me, it gets warm dancing with all those clothes on, but we never strip." When she, Sina, and Sheila perform, Ford said they're draped with camel belts, harem pants, coin necklaces, veils, baubles, and trinkets. Most of the time, only their teeth are bared. "It's not necessary to have our stomach exposed," Ford said. "The original Middle Eastern dancers were completely covered. It was forbidden by their religion to even have their faces exposed, although it made it tough to see." The next story is, hearing concludes on trustees' vote to terminate NICC president's contract, by Elizabeth Kelsey. An administrative hearing to determine whether Northeast Iowa Community College's Board of Trustees was justified in voting to terminate the college president's contract ended Wednesday. A ruling in the case is expected next month. Herbert Riedel was placed on paid administrative leave by the NICC Board of Trustees on October 9th, and board members unanimously voted to proceed with termination procedures on November 20th. Riedel requested the private hearing to determine whether there was just cause for the board to seek his termination. He remains on paid administrative leave. The hearing, which took place in Des Moines Monday through Wednesday, allowed both sides to call witnesses and provide documentation to support their claims. In an email sent to the Telegraph Herald at about 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, Riedel confirmed the hearing had just concluded. "Both sides will submit post-hearing briefs in 3 weeks, and then the judge has 10 days for a ruling," he wrote. "On the advice of my attorney, I have no further comments at this time." Reached earlier in the day, NICC officials noted that the hearing was still alive at that time and said they would not be able to provide comments for this article. A call to NICC seeking comment Wednesday afternoon following the hearing was not returned. Since the board's November 20th vote to begin termination proceedings, Riedel has filed a lawsuit against the Board of Trustees, alleging the board violated Iowa's Open Meetings Act by implementing a performance action plan for Riedel during a closed session. NICC officials have said they plan to defend the college against those allegations. Riedel also has filed complaints against NICC and its board members with Iowa Department of Education, Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, and Higher Learning Commission, though the commission deemed the issue in his complaint do not indicate substantive noncompliance with the HLC standards, saying it would not be investigated further. In those complaints and previous statements, Riedel expressed concerns about how diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives were being implemented at NICC and alleged certain board members were trying to be overly involved in day-to-day management of the college. NICC officials have previously Lee asserted that neither the college nor board members micromanaged Riedel or micromanaged the college. The board's stated reasons for voting to terminate Riedel's contract included failure to make, quote, satisfactory improvements, unquote, in areas of the performance action plan. And then we have the news in brief column. Authorities. Delaware County driver leads law enforcement on high-speed chase. Dateline, Manchester, Iowa. Authorities said a Delaware County man led law enforcement on a high-speed chase that reached speeds of more than 100 miles per hour on U.S. Highway 20. Dallas R. Selby, 34, of Manchester, was arrested at about 9:30 p.m. Tuesday on U.S. 20 west of Dyersville on charges of eluding and operating while intoxicated. Court documents state that Manchester police attempted to stop Selby's vehicle around 9 p.m. in Manchester for equipment violations and an active arrest warrant. Selby immediately fled the traffic stop at a high rate of speed, documents state. Selby drove on the wrong side of the roadway and ignored traffic control devices while eluding. Multiple squad cars pursued Selby's vehicle on U.S. 20. Selby's vehicle reached a speed of 105 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone, documents state. Law enforcement attempted to stop Selby's vehicle with tire deflation devices. The pursuit lasted approximately 30 minutes before Selby stopped his vehicle and was taken into custody, documents state. Selby exhibited signs of intoxication and alcohol shooters were located in his vehicle, documents state. Dubuque man sentenced to 15 years for sexual abuse of a child. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for sexually assaulting a girl under the age of 13. Kyle W. Balk, 18, recently received the sentence in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to charges of third-degree sexual abuse, lascivious acts with a child, purchase and possession of a depiction of a minor in a sex act, tampering with a witness, and interference with official acts. As part of a plea deal approved by Senior Judge James Coyle, a charge of second-degree sexual abuse was dismissed. Court documents state that Balk repeatedly sexually assaulted a child younger than 13 last year in Dubuque. The victim also reported being sexually assaulted by two other men. A search warrant of Balk's phone showed inappropriate photos and a video of the victim, documents state. The girl's mother also told police that the assault was reported. Balk called the girl and threatened to come after her if the case was pursued. Also charged in the case is David C. Anderson, 18, of East Dubuque, Illinois. He is charged with second-degree sexual abuse and third-degree sexual abuse and has pleaded not guilty. Five local communities and college received tree awards. Five local communities and one college will receive Urban Forestry Awards from Arbor Day Foundation and Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Dubuque, Hopkinton, Luxembourg, Manchester, and Maquoketa will receive Tree City Awards, according to a press release. The awards will be presented April 4th in Ankeny. Cities qualifying for the award must have, quote, either a city forester or an active city tree board, have a tree ordinance, spend at least $2 per capita annually for its community forestry program, and have a tree planting and maintenance plan, unquote, according to the release. Epworth's Divine Word College will receive a Tree Campus USA Award. Qualifying schools must have a campus tree advisory committee, a tree care plan, a tree program with dedicated annual expenditures, an annual Arbor Day observance, and a service learning project to engage the student body, according to the release. And police? The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported the following. Adam D. Young, 31, of 1365 Loris Boulevard, was arrested at 7:21 p.m. Tuesday in the 1300 block of Loris Boulevard on a charge of third offense operating while intoxicated. The theft of a vehicle worth $2,500 was reported at 7:17 a.m. Wednesday in the 2000 block of Elm Street. And criminal damage of $600 to a vehicle was reported at 4:36 p.m. Monday in the 400 block of Main Street. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 28, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Mary K. Edwards, Hickory, North Carolina. Mary Kathleen K. Edwards, 86, passed away surrounded by loved ones at her home in Hickory, North Carolina, on Friday, March 15, 2024. In lieu of flowers, donations may be mailed to the Kathleen Edwards Memorial Scholarship, care of Beth Block, P.O. Box 72, Gordon, Wisconsin, 54838, for a fund in Kathleen's memory that will provide a trade school scholarship for a graduating senior at Northwood School in Minong, Wisconsin. A celebration of life dinner will be held on April 27, 2024 at Happy's Place in Dubuque from 4 to 8 p.m. for those who would like to share memories of Kathleen and her family. Condolences may be sent to the Edwards family at BennettFuneralsService.com. The Edwards family is in the care of Bennett Funeral Service of Newton, 828-465-2111. Leona Becker. Leona Jean Sis Becker, 75, of Dubuque, died Monday, March 25, 2024, at Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque. A funeral service for Leona will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 30, 2024, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Burial will be in East Dubuque Cemetery, East Dubuque, Illinois. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting Leona's obituary at hskfhcares.com. Pamela J. Burns, Zwingle, Iowa. Pamela J. Burns, 76, of Zwingle, died on Wednesday, March 25, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 2nd, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, at Holy Family Catholic Church in Piasta. Bernard J. Hinderman, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Bernard J. Hinderman, 76, of Lancaster, died Sunday, March 24, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 29th, at Soman Larson Funeral Home in Montford. Private burial will take place in Rock Church Cemetery in Livingston. Stephen Bartman, Sr. Stephen Bartman, Sr., 77, of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Visitation will be held from 9 to 9:45 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road, where services will follow at 10 a.m. Bonnie L. Wilkinson, Salt Lake City. Bonnie L. Wilkinson, 76, of Salt Lake City, died Sunday, March 24, 2024. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena, Illinois, is assisting the family. Robert F. Bream, Durango, Iowa. Robert F. Robbie Bream, 83, of Durango, died on Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Services will be private. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Beverly Brandt, Galena, Illinois. Beverly Brandt, 93, of Galena, died on Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Services will be held at noon Thursday, April 4th, at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. And Russell A. Pope, 48, of Dubuque, died on Friday, March 22, 2024. Private services were held. Bear Funeral Home of Dubuque is assisting the family. And funeral services? Thomas J. Bainbridge, Brownton, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 4th, Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, and from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, April 5th, at St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church, Cuba City. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Tammy L. Baker, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 1 to 4 p.m., with services starting at 1:30 p.m., Saturday, March 30th, Grace Point Church. Donald J. Banfield, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 10:15 a.m. today at St. Raphael Cathedral. Massive Christian burial 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the cathedral. Arlene R. Henneberry, Bernard, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, April 1st, and at 9 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Catherine A. Hocking, Fenimore, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, April 1st, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd. Lancaster United Methodist Church. Service 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church. Francis Marshall, Bernard, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, April 5th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Service 10 a.m. Saturday, April 6th at the funeral home. James W. Powers, Dubuque. Visitation 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Monday, April 1st, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Service 4:30 p.m. April 1st at the funeral home. And Velma L. Steele, Bloomington, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 30th, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Bloomington. Service is at 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Now we turn to the sports page, and this headline, Spring in Their Steps. This is Boys Prep Soccer Mississippi Valley Conference by Tim O'Neill. The four Dubuque Area Mississippi Valley Conference programs find themselves feeling optimistic as the spring season dawns. Senior has been on the cusp of reaching its first state tournament for a few seasons now, and Hempstead found itself back in the saddle last year after a few down seasons. Even Wallard and Western Dubuque, which managed four wins apiece last year, have reasons to be excited for what this season could hold. Here's a capsule look at area teams competing in the MBC this season. Dubuque Hempstead, coach Alex Lee in his second season. Last year, 8-10. Returning starters, Aiden Rode, Joel Astola, Charlie Setter, Drew Lewis, Mitch Tackney, Jack Berg, and Dennis Masinovich, and Bryce Rowling. Other returning veterans are Will Scott, Hayden Lowenberg, Caden Burrows, and Jackson Leipold. Promising newcomers, Mateo Sotglu, Pablo Huerga Galen, Gavin Lux, and Mason Cook. Alumni competing in college, Brady Cole at Coe and Dylan Schemmel at Clark. Outlook, the Mustangs have high hopes this season with eight returning starters and four others who saw playing time during a season in which Hempstead posted its highest victory total since 2016. A strong finish to last season and a more veteran team should play in its favor. Tackney was the team's leading goal scorer last year with seven, but Lewis and Masinovic each added six, and Rowling was fifth on the team with three. Rode saw plenty of action in goal and made 78 saves. Dubuque Senior, coach Dan Rothert. In his fifth season, last year they were 12-5. Returning starters are Seth Connolly, Soren Obermiller, Trey Benson, Ethan Callahan, Biniam Andrews, Merrick Hull, and Jose Rubio and Jeremy O'Rourke. Other returning veterans are Danny Rothert. Promising newcomers are Adam Marks, Kobe Hargrove, Owen Elkamp, Gabe Smith, and Colton Frood. Alumni competing in college are Owen Hull at St. Ambrose and Jimmy Berna at Simpson. Outlook, former Loras College coach Dan Rothert returns to lead the Rams after getting his start coaching the program from 1997 to 2000. Senior has been on a roll in recent seasons and hopes to keep that going. The Rams return a strong group of starters and should be able to lean on strong team chemistry in the early going. Senior will be looking for a new group of leaders to step up after losing 28 of their 40 goals and their number one goalkeeper from last season. Andrews is the top returning scorer after tallying four goals last season. Benson, Obermiller, and Conley and Hall also scored. Dubuque Wallard, coach Eric Rasmussen in his first season. Last year they were 4-15. Returning starters are Christopher Schmidt, Alex Shade, Connor Walsh, Tate Shope, Ted Kahn, Nathan Schissel, and Luke Welbies. Outlook? The Golden Eagles have a strong group of returning players this spring, but there will be a getting-to-know-you period as they break in a new group of players and a new head coach. Rasmussen is the assistant coach at Emmaus Bible College and previously coached at the high school level at Pact Charter School in Minnesota and Tri-State Christian School. Schmidt has been a steady force at the back end of the defense for multiple seasons and made 93 saves last year. Walsh is the top returning scorer after tallying 5 goals and 7 assists a season ago. Western Dubuque. Coach James Suarez, last year 4-14. Returning starters, Evan Pasker, Brian Cammiller, Logan Closer, Maxwell Ingelsabi, Xander Ellers, Caden Aubrech, Gage Hughes, Bryce Coyle, and Brody Stainer. Other returning veterans are Riley Dieters. Outlook, the Bobcats have had a few rough seasons, but the outlook is appearing brighter. Western Dubuque last season posted its most wins since 2018 and matched the program's win total over the previous 3 completed seasons. The Bobcats return a large group of contributors this season and should be more competitive on the pitch. Stainer said the team with 10 goals led the team with 10 goals last season, while Aubrech added 5 goals and 2 assists. Cam Miller had a team-high 6 assists. Dieters figures to step in to replace longtime goalkeeper Skylar Ridenour. Now turning to girls prep golf and the River Valley Conference, this story is titled Trailblazers Return Depth for State Quest, by Jim Leitner. The Dyersville-Beckman Catholic girls golf team spent all last spring contending at major tournaments, and this season figures to be more of the same. The Trailblazers won the River Valley Conference's North Division Championship and finished second in the Super Meet before taking 8th at the Iowa Class 2A State Meet in Marshalltown. 4 players returned from that squad, which will move down a class for postseason play. Here is a capsule look at the area teams in the RVC. Beckman, Coach Jim Sheston in his 48th season. Last season they went 45-11, River Valley North champions, RVC Super Meet runner-up, 8th place at Iowa Class 2A State Meet. Returning State Meet qualifiers are Maddie Schmitz, Maddie Cruz, Alyssa Gert, Paige Domeyer, and other returning letter winners are Kelly Snyder and Maggie Domeyer. Promising newcomer, Maddie Simon and Molly Snyder. Outlook, with 4 starters returning from last season's state meet squad, the Trailblazers figured to be in the mix for another state berth as well as the RVC crown. Schmitz will lead the way and also figures to be a contender in the postseason. Last spring, Gort tied for 4th at the RVC Super Meet. A key for Beckman will be developing 5th and 6th players. Beckman will drop from Class 2A to Class 1A for the tournament series. Cascade, Coach Claire Maloney, 2nd season. Last season they were 10-17. Returning letter winners are Anna Matternack, Mia Gell, Maggie Archer, and Kylie McCabe. Promising newcomers, Ellen Nauman, Ava Kremer, Eden Casey, Lily Supple, and Maggie Noonan. Outlook, Matternack, Gell, and Archer bring veteran leadership to a squad that includes a cast of newcomers with potential. Maloney believes the group will hit its stride as the season progresses. Maquoketa, Kevin Bowman in his 3rd season. Last season, they were 3-7. Returning letter winners are Skylar Berkey, Becca Pulowski, Elise Elmgreen, Olivia Kleppe, and promising newcomers are Maddie Herring and Abby Eltrich. Outlook, the Cardinals hope to move up in the RVC standings behind a trio of seniors with extensive varsity experience. Bellevue, Coach Mark Rudin, last season 13th in RVC meet. Returning letter winners are Adeline Leach, Miranda Stroud, Ali Yaroff, and promising newcomers are Carly McComey, Maddie Meyer, and Addison Felderman. Outlook, The Comets have just three golfers back from a year ago and will battle to climb the RVC leaderboard. Now we'll turn to On the Air today. In men's college hockey, the Brewers at the Mets, 12:10 p.m. on BSWI, and radio is WPVL AM 1590. Tigers at White Sox, 3:10 p.m., NBC SCHI, and on radio is WMVP AM 1000. And Cubs at the Rangers at 6:35 p.m. on ESPN, or radio WDBQ AM 1490. In men's college hockey, NCAA regional semifinal Denver versus Massachusetts at 1 p.m. on ESPN2. In NCAA regional semifinal, Maine versus Cornell at 5:30 p.m. on ESPN News. In golf, the PGA Tour Texas Children's Hospital Open at 3 p.m. on the Golf Channel. And the LPGA Tour Ford Championship at 6 p.m. on the Golf Channel. In NHL hockey, the Blackhawks at the Oilers at 6 p.m. on NBC SCHI Plus. In college basketball, LSU at Arkansas at 6 p.m. on ESPN 2. In women's college lacrosse, Penn State at Ohio State at 6 p.m. on BTN. In men's college basketball, Clemson versus Arizona at 6 p.m. on CBS, and San Diego State versus UConn at 6:30 p.m. on TBS True TV. And Alabama versus North Carolina at 8:30 p.m. on CBS, and Illinois versus Iowa State at 9 p.m. on TBS True TV. Next, we have this story titled Janch Earns Legacy Honor from Athletic Directors by Jim Leitner. A longtime Dubuque administrator received recognition from the Iowa High School Athletic Directors Association during its annual award ceremony this weekend in Iowa City. The association bestowed its prestigious emeritus legacy status on Bill Janch, who served the Dubuque community for 38 years. The legacy honors denotes distinguished service and contributions as an athletic administrator. Janch served as the IHS ADA historian from 1987 to 1997, received the State Award of Merit in 1997, and joined the IHS ADA Hall of Fame in 1998. He won the Northeast District Athletic Director of the Year three times, in 1980-81, in 1989 and 90, and 1996 and 97, his final season before retirement. Janch served as a teacher, coach, administrator, volunteer, and fundraiser in Dubuque well into his 80s, and he always encouraged youngsters to continue their education, try new experiences, participate in plays, musicals, and sports, and serve their community and travel. Janch participated in every sport at Dorchester High School in Wisconsin before graduating in 1950. His passion for sports led him to the University of Wisconsin to pursue a career in education and coaching. Following a stint in the Marines, Janch earned a master's degree in science education from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Janch returned to his home state and began his coaching career in Belmont while serving as a teacher and administrator. He earned Wisconsin's Educator of the Year in 1967. Janch moved on to Dubuque Senior in 1969 to teach science, coach freshman basketball, and serve as an assistant varsity football coach. He took over the football program the following year and led the Rams to the Mississippi Valley Conference Championship in his second season. It marked Senior's first football championship in 28 years. Janch became Senior's Activities Director in 1973 and helped to initiate the women's athletic programs through Title IX. He played pivotal roles in developing the Dubuque Soccer Complex and hiring full-time athletic trainers for Dubuque schools. From 1982 to 97, he served as Dubuque Community School District's Athletic Director. He was inducted into Senior's Athletic Hall of Fame in 2002. After his retirement, Jantz served on the board and as an officer of the Salvation Army, YMCA, Rotary, and Dubuque Soccer Alliance for decades. Cottrell remains atop state bowling standings. Dubuque's Cindy Cottrell remains atop the all-events scratch standings in the Iowa State USBC Women's State Bowling Tournament, which is taking place at Cherry Lanes and Round 2 in Piasta, Iowa. The event opened March 2nd and runs through April 28th. Cottrell shot 1,950 and leads Mason City's Samantha Buck by 29 pins. The other leaders are Buck with 648 in singles, Bettendorf's Shaylee Edwards and Alexis Knapp with 1,542 in doubles, Atumwa's Divas Descendants with 3,018 in team, and Atumwa's Afton Longacre with 2,380 in all events with handicap. And Farm Boys take second in General's Cup. The Galena Farm Boys High School Rugby Club took second place in the General's Cup on Saturday at Weenan Fields in Galena, Illinois. Denver, Iowa went 3-0 to claim the title, followed by the Farm Boys at 2-1, Northwest Missouri at 1-2, and Clinton, Iowa at 0-3. The Farm Boys feature players from Galena, Scales Mound, Benton, Cuba City, Warren, and Stockton. This was their first time hosting a seven-man tournament. And we'll finish up with the local and area roundup. Lors outlast Knights in ARC debut. On a day when Lors needed to keep scoring, Daniel Rogers and Cody Sunny certainly did their part. Rogers went 4-for-5 with a homer, 4 RBIs, and 4 runs scored. Sunny matched him with a 4-for-5 effort at the plate with 3 runs driven in, and the Duhawks outlasted Wartburg 12-10 on Wednesday at Petrakas Park in their American Rivers Conference baseball opener. Rogers' third-inning solo homer cut the Duhawks' deficit to 4-2 before his fifth-inning 2-run double and tied the game at 8-8. His base hit in the seventh again knotted the score at 10-10. Sonny's fifth-inning single put Lors ahead 9-8 before providing the game-winning RBI hit in the seventh to put the Duhawks ahead for good 11-10. The pair combined for 8 of the Duhawks' 15 hits. Lors improved to 12-4 overall, and former Western Dubuque and Dubuque Wallert Prep Garrett Kadolf struck out with his only plate appearance. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.